This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Evan Wasuka, and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia, where we'll be taking a look at the big stories from across the region over the past week. Coming up on the show, 49 dead and a growing crisis for Papua New Guinea as automatic weapons fuel tribal violence. An Australian veteran finds love and stability in a former war zone. And we hear how Vanuatu residents are coping with the ever-rising cost of living. We'll have more on those stories coming up. We start in Papua New Guinea, where 49 people were killed earlier this week in an ambush by warring tribes in the country's highlands region. The men were the latest deaths in a violent and gruesome tribal conflict. And as the ABC's PNG correspondent Tim Swanston reports, the shocking event has come as the debate over the country's internal security continues.
Meet Papua New Guinea's newest batch of police recruits. More than 200 future officers have been training here at Bamana in Port Moresby's outskirts for months.
We will teach you the basics of community court fights.
After they graduate in April, hundreds more will follow as PNG's police commissioner looks to bolster his forces to tackle more law and order challenges.
Yes. We would like to see five, 10 years' time from now, highly effective and efficient police force that is able to take on the challenges of today as well as the emerging challenges in the future.
And we have the prosecution.
When they graduate, they'll join about 6,000 officers across the country. While estimates of PNG's population vary, that's only about 50 officers per 100,000 people. In Australia, there's proportionally five times more.
We're losing members through retirement, through dismissals, through resignation, and through deaths, whilst the intent is to build up in the next 5 years to 10,000. It will take some time.
The country's significant internal security challenges were made abundantly clear just this weekend. In PNG's highlands in Enga province, about 50 tribesmen and mercenaries were ambushed and shot dead. It follows months of tribal fighting last year, supercharged by access to high-powered firearms. Police in the region say they need more resources and greater powers as more illegal arms reach remote villages in the country.
We've asked for a stronger police approach, especially in the face of firepower.
Last month, devastating riots killed more than 20 people nationally. 50 police officers are facing disciplinary action after allegedly encouraging looters.
It unraveled, many years of progress for us. But, the best way we can approach it is to, reinforce our accountability of what happened on that day. And we have been quite transparent and accountable as to the corrective measures we've taken.
Increasing the number of quality police and their resources in the nation's provinces is now a national priority.
On top of riots in the capital last month and a massacre in the highlands region this week, Papua New Guinea is facing a major fuel crisis with the country's sole provider running out of supplies. Puma Energy has shut down some of its operations, cancelled clients' contracts, and closed its own service station in Port Moresby. Former Energy Minister Karenga Kuo has blamed the government in part for the crisis after failing to appoint his successor. Mr. Kuo has accused Puma Energy of operating with malicious and hostile motives, and he'd like to see them leave the country.
It's been coming for a while. Up until recently, when I was minister, I kept an interim truce between all the disputing factions, including Puma, Bank of Papua New Guinea, and BSP. I kept them together and I asked them to maintain fuel supply and forex supply to each other and fuel supply to the country until we find a solution to the underlying issues between Puma and Bank of Papua New Guinea and also Puma and BSP. After many months, we were not able to reach an agreement. Bank of Papua New Guinea remained adamant that they rejected all of Puma's explanation for their increased demand for forex. And BSP, having issued a warning to close the bank accounts, maintained their position without disclosing their grounds. So that is why Puma has not been able to satisfy either of Central Bank or BSP Bank. That is why the closure of their supply system in the country was inevitable. We were going to reach that point at some point in time. So when I resigned as minister, the prime minister did not appoint a new minister. Quite improperly, I believe, considering the emergency that's still running, he should have allocated the responsibility to a minister who should have picked up the issues and run with it. But because he has not made up his mind about who he should appoint, the issue ran its own course without ministerial leadership. And we've come to this point.
Can we infer that Puma has run out of forex? Is that what has happened?
That's what they are saying. And I don't believe that they are correct in saying that. You know, why should they be claiming double the volume of forex when fuel supply volume has not doubled? Fuel price has not substantially increased. What is the underlying justification for the increased demand for forex from Bank of Papua New Guinea? If they were able to get, let's say, $30 million a month instead of 50, well, they should scale their business down to that level and still maintain fuel supply at $30 million a month. Why shut down completely?
Former PNG Minister for Energy, Keranga Kua, and he was speaking there to the ABC's Liam Fox. As World Pride festivities continue in Sydney, gender and sexually diverse people are out in public celebrating their identities openly. But in many parts of the Pacific, such open displays are frowned upon and even punishable, albeit under laws that are rarely enacted. Dubravka Volodea has been finding out what life is like for queer people across the Pacific in 2024.
In Solomon Islands, Kai, not his real name, has two identities. One private one for his best friends and close family, and a public one.
You have to be a strong person to go through day by day. I'll say most of everyone in my country, they don't accept people like us, like me. It's hard. With the help of my close friends and stuff, I'm able to just be myself, but like just within my circle. Every time I like go out to the public, I don't really have that confidence to like dress up and just be me. I have to like dress as a straight person.
Living in Honiara, he left home when he was 19 after telling his family that he's gay. His mom accepted it. His father did not. Despite trying to conform in his public life, he has faced abuse and is relying on support from his cousins, aunties, and close friends.
I have three other friends here that in the same community as I am. We're supporting each other. Whenever we go out together and people or like men trying to bully us and stuff, we always stand up for each other. Yeah. I mean, there's not much people like us here. I don't know if they're just scared to come out.
There is no other organized support network. Kai lives in a country where homosexuality is criminalized. He says he's scared of the police and the justice system.
I'm afraid of the law as well, because just recently I saw the Prime Minister's speech on LGBTQ, and then he said something about he will never accept it here in the country, so I'm just keeping myself safe.
Pacific Beat has been told that the experience of many queer Papua New Guineans are similar to that of Kai. Several countries in the Pacific criminalize homosexuality. Cross-dressing is also taboo in many countries, with same-sex relationships punishable by 14 years in jail. Although these laws are rarely used, discrimination against people from the queer communities can be a problem. Tongan lady Joey Jolene Mataele grew up in a mostly supportive family, but also faced hurdles.
I had a bad experience with my brother and my father because it was when I started wearing women's clothes, that became an issue. You know, being gay was fine.
In Tonga, homosexuality and cross-dressing is also outlawed. But unlike in Solomon Islands, many members of the queer community can live their lives more freely. And there's a support network, including Joey Jolene's Laity's Association.
I was going to put my foot down and tell them, I am what I am. You know, I cannot change that. I'm not going to marry a woman when I don't have any feelings for that person. I adopted 3 kids, and they're beautiful kids. Now I'm a grandparent of 5 grandchildren, and, you know, the 3 kids are well-educated. They're not even LGBT at all, which, you know, some of my family were a bit worried.
Joey Jolene Mataele says rather than focusing on decriminalization, they're currently translating United Nations LGBTQIA+ guidelines into Tongan. Joey Jolene hopes it will make a difference and raise awareness.
We don't really use LGBTIQ in our everyday lives because we use Leiti or Fafafine. The generation will grow up and know, you know, and be comfortable for who they are, and the people of Tonga will, you know, will be educated in their children will know language.
In Samoa, sex between men is prohibited, but cross-dressing is legal. For Fafafine Fagalima Tuatagaloa, it's made all the difference. Fagalima says other members of the rainbow community who are not protected by the law face stigma, but things are slowly changing.
People of LGBTQI other than Fafafine Fatama, we've seen them visible and we've seen them, we've heard them talking. It's a long process. We're still helping them out in terms of ensuring that their visibility is of 100% and that they are also taking part in many of the activities.
Vanuatu is one Melanesian country where same-sex relationships are legal. Despite this, Gilio Kalesi from the organization V-Pride says discrimination is a problem.
So certainly Vanuatu have found ways to live openly and actively involved in advocating for their rights, where some aren't. Many others face stigma, social exclusion and discrimination in their daily life. That also comes results in no accessibility to healthcare services or employment.
Until things change, Kai in Solomon Islands encourages others to be brave.
I was born this way, so for me to just change who I am just because the society wants me to change or just because people don't accept people like me, that's just so wrong because I didn't choose to be like this. My message to other people like me that face stuff that I'm going through, being a gay, be yourself and just stay strong and don't let other people's opinion stop you from being who you are.
Kai in Solomon Islands speaking out and ending that report from Dubravka Volodea on the diverse experiences of the queer community in the Pacific in 2024. Taro is a staple food in many Pacific households, but in Samoa, it's in short supply. The shortage has seen the price of the vegetable soar in some places, and health experts fear an increased reliance on white rice could have poor health outcomes. Kyle Evans has more.
In the bustling streets of Apia, the root vegetable taro is a hot commodity. But in recent times, local trader Tavita Tumanivaal says the popular food has been in short supply.
It started in October last year, from there until now. There's still enough supply of taro in the country though, especially in the market. But there are times when you see there's no taro at the market because there's been lots of buyers. There's also an abundance of breadfruit and it seems that some are making the most of the breadfruit instead of using taro.
The shortage has seen the price of taro in Samoa triple. And Kuini Mary Finau from the Pacific Horticultural Agricultural Market Access Plus program says volume of overseas exports of taro have plummeted also.
I think up to 2021, exports was doing okay. It was recovering from COVID. And then we just saw a big decline in 2022 and 2023. So we're seeing a little bit of recovery now. But 2022 and 2023, the export volumes were just really low. And that's because there was a dire shortage of taro in country. And so the price went up here in the local market. And so all the farmers that had taro were just selling in the local market. And there was just very little going to exports.
Kuini says a lack of planting material, known as teopula, is to blame for the shortage. There's other factors too, such as a nationwide labour shortage brought about by seasonal work programs and feral pigs.
Before a lot of the people left for RSE schemes, there were a lot of people working the land and planting. Now with less people farming in the bush or where the plantations are, the pigs are coming more towards where their homes are. And the younger men leaving and the plantations not being attended to, yeah, the pigs are just coming in and just helping themselves to what was grown.
But help is on the way. Ms. Finau's firm has teamed up with the Samoan government to address the shortage by delivering 500,000 teopula to 100 commercial growers. She hopes it will restore Samoa's export numbers, which had dropped from 4,000 tonnes to only 500 in 2022.
500,000 teopula, if you take only 10% loss, that equates to about 450,000 taro corms. And that's a lot that can supply both the local market and specifically support exports, which has reduced over the months. But teopula is regenerative in nature. So when you plant one teopula, it produces two or three more planting material. So giving them this 500,000 will result in three times more teopula for them to sell to the export market.
The initiative is in the planning phase. However, help can't come soon enough. The decrease of taro has seen reliance on white rice increase, both in Samoa and among the diaspora. Tongan nutritionist Mafi Funaki Taiufote says that's bad news.
When you look at the high incidence of diabetes, so my concern as a dietitian, if they're moving to rice, and we're talking here white rice, then it will worsen blood sugar levels for those with diabetes, and diabetes is a lot of our community, specific communities and Samoans, are impacted.
Tongan nutritionist Mafi Funaki Taiufote. Ending that report by Kyle Evans. After a long and difficult battle with mental illness, an Australian veteran has found peace in the place he least expected. As Australia's Royal Commission into Veteran Suicide prepares for its final hearing next month, the former soldier wants others like him to find healing.
Michael Jeffrey's deployments to Timor-Leste left him with lasting scars.
I was hurting. Inside, I didn't tell anyone. I kept it all to myself. I didn't see a way forward.
As a soldier in the Australian Army, he was sent there three times on peacekeeping missions in the early 2000s. Back then, Timor-Leste was recovering from a brutal Indonesian occupation that saw tens of thousands of people killed. Although the country had finally gained independence, it was crippled by poverty. The effects were devastating.
Seeing children asking for water, aqua, you know, aqua mister, like all of us Australian soldiers witnessed this. But for me, that really stayed with me.
After leaving the army in 2008, the former soldier's mental health took a turn.
I was diagnosed through a psychiatrist that I have PTSD, anxiety and major depressive disorder.
Michael Jeffrey's marriage broke down, he lost his house, and it felt like everything was falling apart.
I didn't think I'd be happy again. I honestly didn't.
Everything changed when he decided to go back to Timor-Leste in 2022.
My first deployment to this country was what affected me the most, that I would come back here to find my happiness and to feel inner peace. I didn't expect that at all.
The trip was run by an organisation called Timor Awakening, an Australian NGO that supports veterans after they leave the military. Michael Stone is the program's director.
We've been going for over 7 years now, taken over 500 veterans on programs.
Participants help build schools, visit historic sites, and connect with Timorese locals who fought for their country's independence.
The Timorese veterans themselves went through 24 years of incredible trauma and suffering, and they're role models to us in resilience.
These people have lived through terrible, terrible times and are still moving forward, still wanting peace.
When Michael Jeffries returned to Australia, he struck up a friendship with a Timorese woman on Facebook. Soon, he was back on a plane.
And I said to Bella, I'm coming back. I flew over on my own. I came straight back and we met at the airport with all the family.
Herself a survivor of the occupation, Bella Mesquita always admired the Australian troops who served there.
For us kids, the time you are our hero, like you save us.
The pair are now married and starting a new life together in her remote village.
Now, life is amazing. Life is positive. I'm extremely happy and I'm at peace. I have inner peace.
While he's found healing, others like him are still doing it tough. In March, Australia's Royal Commission into Veteran Suicide will begin its final public hearing in Sydney. Michael Jeffries wants programs like Timor Awakening to be available to all Australian veterans.
I honestly believe that this program, the Timor Awakening program, should be a part of the transition from service into civilian life.
Australian veteran Michael Jeffries ending that report by Marion Farr. The rising cost of living is hitting most Pacific nations, but in Vanuatu, it's worse than it's ever been. It comes amid further political turmoil and a spate of natural disasters. The ABC's reporter in Port Vila, S.N. Jack, hit the streets to find out how rising prices and political turmoil are impacting the lives of Nevans.
At Port Vila's central market, there's been a constant talking point over the past 12 months. And more recently, the point is getting louder.
For me being like one tin fish where...
Prices are rising practically every day. My favourite tin fish used to cost 190 vatu, but I now pay 220 vatu for it the next day.
For Dalsi Temakon, a handicrafts market vendor, the increases in basic goods is hard to ignore. She says she wants action.
Me really want them looking, say, price control, yeah.
I want the price control unit to implement measures to ensure that everyone is treated fairly.
It's the same for Stephen Mile, a local builder.
Because Vanuatu produces few goods, the global war is the cause of this inflation. The government must assist farmers in increasing the output and promote regional companies.
One of the causes of inflation is out of the control of the local government. The impacts of overseas wars in Ukraine and Gaza has hit most economies, but other causes are Omicron. The impact of three major cyclones that ripped through the country last year is still causing major issues with food supply. And government support for the recovery from the cyclone is still yet to fully trickle out to the affected communities. According to Tson Salong, Vanuatu's Minister of Finance, it means inflation isn't going anywhere.
The impact of inflation will persist in the region as a result of global geopolitical tensions and war.
But Vanuatu's opposition party, led by former Prime Minister Ismail Kalsakau, is questioning why. He says the government needs to do more.
Reserve Bank, you know, move quick time. Well, it looks like we've finished some old signs.
Despite seeing certain indications of inflation already, the Reserve Bank has not provided an explanation for why they did not move more quickly to combat it. It is also their responsibility to observe and respond.
It comes as the Vanuatu government led by Saulo Salwai faces yet another motion of no confidence. The motion lodged by Mr. Kalsakau and supported by 8 other MPs will be debated today.
And that's it from Pacific Review. I'm Evan Wasuka. Thank you for listening, and do join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from across the Pacific region. Pacific Review is produced on the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation.